Welcome back to the University of Minnesota Extension's Nutrient Management Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Wilcox, and I'm a communications generalist here at U of M Extension. Today, we're talking about nitrogen and sulfur application. We have four panelists here with us today. Can you each give us a quick introduction?
This is Daniel Kaiser. I'm a nutrient management specialist located on the University of Minnesota St. Paul campus.
This is Yuxin Miao, Associate Professor of Precision Agriculture and Director of the Precision Agriculture Center on the St. Paul campus of University of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Jeff Coulter. I'm an Extension corn agronomist located on the St. Paul campus.
And I am Fabian Fernandez, a nutrient management specialist focused on nitrogen management for corn cropping systems. And I am also located in the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota.
Yuxin and Jeff, I know you have some current nitrogen and sulfur research. Could you summarize those projects for us?
I have been working on nitrogen for a while, mainly focusing on on-farm nitrogen management, on-farm trials. So I have been developing remote sensing-based precision nitrogen management technology, and that has been evaluated using on-farm trials across Minnesota for the past 3 years. And we have been expanding it to different situations like fields with irrigation and also fields with manure applications. And the results so far indicated the technology is very promising. And this year we are expanding to implementation mode. So some of the farmers are adopting this technology and we are just trying to support them to use this technology on their farm. Yes, this is the nitrogen one. We are also doing on-farm sulfur trials. So we have basically from 0 to 40 pound sulfur per acre, you know, at a 10 pound interval, 10 pound per acre interval. The results has been very different, you know, in different fields or different farms, and also changed from year to year. In one field, on one farm, so in 2022, it was very responsive to sulfur. But in 2023, it was not very responsive. We just found, you know, the year-to-year difference can be very significant. Yes, and this is the sulfur trials. And this year, we are starting to ask to conduct nitrogen by sulfur interaction experiments. So we have two fields. We have 5 nitrogen reads and 3 sulfur reads. And that's kind of a big on-farm trial, you know. And in addition to this, we are conducting a nitrogen by planting density on-farm trial. So we have 3 planting densities, 30,000 seeds per acre and 8,000 and with 5 nitrogen reads. Yeah, so these are for corn, and we are also doing nitrogen by irrigation interaction research for potato using small plot experiments.
With funding from the Minnesota Ag Fertilizer Research and Education Council, I've been doing trials in collaboration with Jeff Vetch of Waseca, Paolo Pagliari of Lamberton, and Dan Kaiser here on the St. Paul campus. And we've been looking at basically split application of nitrogen. So applying some nitrogen at the V14 stage using the 360 Y drop system. And then we've also been looking at putting in an additional 10 pounds of sulfur per acre with that V14 nitrogen application to see the effect of that on corn yield. And then we've been comparing that for different hybrids and also planted at different planting rates. So we're doing that on hybrids of around 100, 104 and 108 relative maturity. And each of those are planted at 34,000 and 38,000 seeds per acre in continuous corn. So trying to see where the split application of nitrogen with or without additional sulfur may provide a benefit to corn. And we've been doing that over the last 2 years, and we're starting our third year of research right now. And over the last 2 years, we have not found an advantage to split application of nitrogen at the V14 stage or to additional sulfur applied with that V14 nitrogen application.
You know, that's a kind of an interesting thing that you're mentioning, Jeff, because there is a lot of advertisement out there about, you know, late applications of nitrogen or late applications of nutrients to the crop, because when you look at when the crop is taking up nutrients, that's kind of when it's happening. There is a lot of that happening at that point. But I think what you're describing matches pretty closely with some of the work that I've been doing, not so much with sulfur, but more related to nitrogen, where if you apply nitrogen in, you know, early cedars around V6, V8, the chance of nitrogen loss at that point is pretty low. And so whatever nitrogen you apply there will be there for the crop, and later applications will not necessarily make a difference. And in fact, sometimes if you delay the application, you can run into issues where if it gets dry, the application may not actually get into the root zone. And so you could actually create more harm than benefit by delaying those applications.
And it's one of the interesting things that I've seen too, and Jeff, I don't know if you can comment on this stuff phenotypically, is, you know, we do see differences in some of the hybrids and how they tend to yellow at certain times. So I know I've noticed, you know, long noticed actually, since we started sulfur research, some of the decalb hybrids we had, we tend to see a little bit of striping on the leaves early on. And I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, the fact that these hybrids are more responsive to sulfur. It just seems like, you know, the way they might be growing, it might be how they're translocating some of these nutrients. And one of the things in one of my current trials, there was some questions from a consultant who was looking at some of the Pioneer versus the decalb and just kind of how they tend to yellow, some of them more than others, near the top of the canopy late in the growing season. And I think it kind of, you know, goes into a lot of what you're doing, Jeff. I mean, it's kind of those questions of whether or not these late applications might be needed just because of what's happening within these plants. I mean, I haven't been able to clearly identify anything. I mean, Jeff, it doesn't sound like you've been either to do that. It's interesting because it just seems like these plants, I mean, might be starving themselves at certain points, but I just haven't been able to figure out a set combination to try to get it where it seems like it really matters in the end. And it's one of the things, you know, early on, I was just looking at some of the data I had just with greenness at V10, where sort of got a decalb and a pioneer, where the one was, the decalb was greener early on, but then it was, or no, actually it was the other way. The pioneer was greener early on, but then it was yellower near the upper canopy later on. And in the end, really, I mean, there were some yield differences, but it wasn't anything where it was consistent across all my location that one was better than the other. You know, while we see these consistent greening or yellowing in some of these plants, I don't know if it really matters anyway. And it's probably something I guess we don't really understand right now in terms of how these companies are breeding these, whether or not there's any differences. And it's one of the reasons I just haven't really decided to change our recommendations and make any changes based on what hybrids being grown in a field.
Yeah, to follow up on that, I think it was 2 years ago at Waseca when we were doing this trial, and in the plot where we didn't have sulfur, there was definite sulfur deficiency symptoms visible on the plants. But by the end of the year, there was no difference in yield between the sulfur fertilized and the non-sulfur fertilized plots. So I think early deficiency of sulfur, those symptoms don't necessarily mean that it's going to be a yield penalty. But, you know, I think the later those symptoms are visible on the plants, the more likely it is that it's going to be translated into a yield difference. Last year at Lamberton, I think we had some visible sulfur deficiency at the V14 stage, and that did translate into some yield differences between the plots that received sulfur preplant versus those that did not. One of the premises for my study, why we were looking at putting on sulfur at the V14 stage, was because corn takes up sulfur a little bit later than it takes up nitrogen. By the V14 stage, which is about 11 days before tasseling, corn has taken up almost 60% of the total amount of nitrogen that it will take up. In comparison, at that same stage, corn has only taken up 25% of the total amount of sulfur that it will take up. So that was kind of why I thought that putting on some sulfur late in the vegetative stages might be advantageous, just to help make sure that that plant doesn't run out of sulfur by the end of the year, and to help to maximize grain filling. So far, over 2 years in two locations, we haven't seen an advantage to that. We had 2 years of drought. We had one or two site years of drought, one site year of very high yields, and then one site year with moderate yields. So we're repeating this study again this year at two locations, and We hope to be able to get a little better handle on this.
You know, I think, Jeff, what you said about those sites with early deficiency symptoms not really making any difference in the yield later, but do seeing differences in yield when you have issues later in the season is actually something pretty telling about how sulfur, the sulfur cycle works and how the plants need sulfur. Early in the season, as you said, there is not a lot of sulfur needs for the crop, and the soils may be a little low just because the mineralization process really hasn't started yet. And so that would not really translate into any long-term issue. But if you do see those deficiencies developing later in the season, that's probably telling you that the soil is not mineralizing. It has not really a capacity to mineralize a lot of sulfur because at that point in the season, it's warm, there is moisture. So there should be, if there is sulfur to be mineralized, it should already be mineralized. And so if you're seeing deficiencies at that point, that's probably telling you that that soil will be, or those situations will be places where you would want to make sure that you supply some additional sulfur so that you don't run into that deficiency.
Yeah, and I think looking at some of the stuff, Yushin, you've been seeing out west on some of those soils, I mean, I'm kind of wondering too how much reduction of sulfate we get annually. I think we get, it's cyclical in our soils where the sulfate will reduce to less available forms as we get towards the end of the season, then be kind of in that same position early in the season, where the farther west you go, especially in these high pH soils, there's something doing with that too that might be why it's kind of my interest in why you're seeing some things that I'm not seeing in terms of the rates with that. So it's one of the things that I've been wondering. It's a complicated cycle. It's more complicated, I think, than we think it is. It's interesting. You can get a lot of pretty big yield response with a small rate of sulfur, but there's some questions I think that are still left to be addressed just based on what I've been seeing.
Yes, on farm situation is quite complicated. You know, we have been using organic matter as an indicator, right? But I see in some fields, organic matter is very high, but still quite responsive to sulfur. But some fields, the organic matter is low, but it may not be responding to sulfur as we expected. And it seems, in addition to organic matter, some other variables are also quite important. You know, one is weather, it's very dry. One is in a very dry year, and the yield is very low, and you know, it's not very responsive to sulfur. And also, landscape conditions can also influence the response to sulfur and texture, soil texture. Yeah, just quite complicated and on-farm conditions.
We've talked about this a little bit, Jeff, but what do we know about the relationship between nitrogen and sulfur in crops?
You know, I think the big thing is that the uptake of nitrogen occurs earlier than the uptake of sulfur. Just thinking about, we want to try to time the nutrient applications to, you know, match the time of uptake. But in the case of later sulfur applications to match that later uptake of sulfur by the crop, it just hasn't really been panning out per se. But I think there's more research that we can do. What I've been doing in my trials has been looking at putting on a pre-plant rate, but then applying extra sulfur at the V14 stage. An alternative approach may be to look at, instead of applying the sulfur pre-plant, applying it in season, say with an early side dress or split application of it. But the issue is we really don't need that much sulfur, so it gets hard to kind of justify split applications and stuff like that.
And this is one of the questions I've gotten. I think that the thought is that if you apply sulfur, that you need more nitrogen. And it's really, I think, the other way around. If you have what I've seen with a lot of my studies, and Yushin, it'll be interesting to see what you get from some of your on-farm trials, but it just seems like with low N, you just don't get a very good utilization of S. And that's kind of what I've seen in a number of my small plot trials where we actually looked at that N by S interaction with that. And I think I'm kind of, Fabian hit the nail on the head here with what I think is happening in a lot of these fields is, you know, looking at Minnesota, I think we're more of an issue being short of sulfur early on. So May is really a critical time period. And I've seen this in several of my sites that as long as we can start mineralizing sulfur by about V5, we tend to not see as much of a benefit. And I've seen it. I've got a field study at Rosemont, and it's interesting. And Yushin, this would be one that I think we should be looking at aerial imaging, because you'll see a lot of sulfur deficiency early on, say through about V10, but then it starts to go away. And if you would image that field, there's some spots that would still show some deficiencies by R1 to R2. So by about silking, but a lot of it tends to go away. I mean, and then you contrast that with Wasika, where it's just yellow the whole season. And then we get into that interaction, because what I tend to see in a lot of times is I tend to see some of my low sulfur plots run out of N a lot quicker. And whether that's just the roots not developing very well and exploiting the soil, there's a number of things that could be occurring in that. But it's one of those things. I don't think that if you apply high sulfur, you need more nitrogen. So it's more of, I think the interaction is more, since we need more nitrogen, it's more the other way around, that you just get very low utilization of sulfur if you have low ends. So it's one of the things to kind of see with some of this. And but it's one of the things that's talked about a lot is that interaction and whether there's an optimal constant or optimal ratio of N to S. And I mean, I'm not necessarily sure there is an optimal ratio. Maybe if you look at the plant, there is something in there. But the thing is, for us supplying it, that a lot of that can be achieved through mineralization. That's what we see in a lot of our soils with these high organic matter contents.
North Dakota State conducted a sulfur by nitrogen interaction study for corn. And it seems they found low nitrogen, like zero nitrogen, and high nitrogen, you know, 240 pounds per acre nitrogen. The yield increase with sulfur rate from 0 to 10 pounds per acre to 20 pounds per acre. But at 60 to 80 pounds per acre nitrogen rates, it seems just 10 pounds per acre sulfur had the highest yield. It seems the sulfur and nitrogen interaction is not very significant. That's what they found. It would be interesting to see what I can get from the on-farm trials.
Dan, what, if any, considerations should farmers make when applying sulfur? Do nitrogen application rates need to be changed?
Looking at the N application, I don't think I'd be changing much based on that. I think the main consideration that growers need to be making is knowing what source they're applying, because we talk about sulfur here amongst the whole group. And, you know, the plant's taking up it as sulfate. So looking at our fertilizer forms, we generally have two forms. We have sulfate forms. So you've got gypsum, ammonium sulfate, most common, some potassium sulfate in the market, or you've got elemental sulfur forms. So something like Tiger 90, which is sulfur plus bentonite, or MST, which is another elemental sulfur form, or something like Micro Essentials, which is AMS and elemental combination. So the main thing with that, the consideration is really how the sulfur is getting to that available form, because the elemental forms take a longer period of time. And that's one of the things that I'm looking at with a lot of my current research is comparing those just to see how quickly we get elemental sulfur. And I'm seeing, especially with these finely ground forms like are in that MST product that I've been using, that we can get some available sulfur within the year that the crop's being grown. But if I look at like Tiger 90, where I incorporate it immediately, which isn't the best thing to do with it, a lot of the responses I seem to be getting are the previous sulfur applications that were done the previous year. So if you're looking at immediate need, I mean, something like a sulfate form, or even, you know, Jeff's been, I think, looking at ammonium thio in a lot of his work with the side dress applications. Those are probably the better two options. And that's one of the considerations you need to make as a grower is, you know, when do I need it? And if I'm going into a new field that I haven't farmed before, I mean, really looking at something more in the sulfate form is what I would recommend. And then if you're looking at some of these elemental forms, I mean, they are a longer term type approach. And I'm looking at that right now, to how long they can last in the soil. Sulfate doesn't leach like nitrate, so we don't see it leaving the profile as quickly. So I do know even with sulfate, I get multi-year benefits. So it's one of the things. I mean, I think the starting point that I talk with a lot of growers really is what form you're applying and knowing what form you're applying, because you need to have a good handle on that to know what you're trying to get. Just make sure that, particularly if you're an elemental form, that if you are in a situation where you might be highly responsive, that you might want something else down initially. And that's where I think that split system, like Jeff's talking about, we give you some flexibility. I mean, particularly with ammonium thio, but at least to get something early on. Now, what we've seen, and this is something, Jeff, I will be interested in looking at again, is looking at some of these applications around V5 or so, V4. Because I had a study in the past where we looked at planting or post-planting application, and I was still able to get maximum yield potential with a V5 application of ammonium sulfate over the soil surface in season. So I know that as long as it's applied at that point, typically I shouldn't have a yield reduction. So you don't need to get all of it on, but it's just a question then, is it any better to have maybe a split application? And I'm not been one that's really been a proponent of that, but if you're already going back through with, say, UAN, it may not be the worst thing in the world to slip a few gallons of ammonium thio in. That's one of the things with sulfur, is that there's a lot of flexibility in what you can do as long as you understand the availability issues with the forms you're applying.
Then you mentioned that they need to make sure that you apply sulfur sources that are available when the crop needs it. And of course, you know, for a pre-plant or side dress application, you definitely would want something with sulfate form. But if you're using elemental sulfur, what would you say is kind of the best timing to do that? Is it the fall, or is it even the year before, you know, the spring of the year before you want that to be available? What have you seen in terms of that elemental becoming available for the crop? How long does it take?
Fabian, it really depends on what form you're applying. If I'm applying something like a Tiger 90, what the company recommends essentially is surface application and letting it sit for about 2 weeks and getting rained on a few times to disperse it. And that's one of the things that I'm seeing. And it's one of the things that I know what's happening, why I'm struggling to see a real positive benefit to Tiger 90 with immediate incorporation, is that our soils are just too tight. I mean, one thing about elemental sulfur is it's not water soluble. Like other fertilizers, which tend to dissolve and can move after they dissolve, elemental sulfur will not do that. It's just going to sit there. And if you've got it buried in a soil with a very tight clays, essentially it's going to pack that elemental sulfur together. And when you talk about elemental sulfur, it's just like limestone in the fact that the smaller the particle size, the quicker the reaction. So when you're looking at that material, you know, what I'd look at, if I was applying something like Tiger 90, if you could slip it in with your fall application, I think it's a good option to do, but you can't immediately incorporate it, because if you immediately incorporate it, that's really where the issue is. And, you know, that's one of the things that you shin with some of your variable rate work. It's one of the things that I start questioning, is because we start looking at what all we can variable rate. So if you've got two bins on an applicator, I mean, it's how much a grower is willing to look at doing that with sulfur if they can only variable rate so much. And I think, I agree, there's probably a need to variable rate in some of these fields. It's just a question of, you know, whether or not that's effective, especially if you're going to be putting it in with P and K. So, you know, would they be able to effectively do it on some of these landscapes? Because I think it is a better option, particularly with elemental, to do that. And with elemental, you know, looking at it, it's a cheaper option. But a lot of times I'm seeing where if the availability is only a quarter to a half of what I get with sulfate, if you've got to apply double, is it really going to matter economically in the end? With that, where you could be looking at some other source. So that's said, it's a tough decision with that, on that. It's what works best in terms of when you can apply it, but then what source you have available for you, and then what rate. You know, really, we know that a low rate can go a long ways, but, you know, we get differences with products and availability, then you may have to make some adjustments. And it's a complicated issue. So it's a lot of, it depends, Fabian, but one of the things with a lot of these sources, if you're dealing with something like Micro Essentials or this MST product, I think you can immediately incorporate it. But if I was looking at elemental, like Tiger 90, I'd try to leave it on the surface for a little while to see if you can get the material to disperse a little bit better.
Fabian, with an early planting window this year, will there be any issues related to nitrogen and sulfur that growers should be concerned about?
Earlier this year in February, during the nitrogen conference, I talked a little bit about kind of back to basics and talked about nutrient availability. And I think that's really relevant to this topic. You know, I think we are having an early spring to a certain degree. I mean, weather-wise, it's been warmer. This whole winter has been warmer than normal. And so we had some degree of mineralization happening for both nitrogen and sulfur in the soil. And so that availability of both sulfur and nitrogen will definitely help the crop get going this year. In terms of planting, I mean, I thought that we were going to be really early planted this year, but here we are the first week of May, and I still have quite a bit of corn to get planted. I have some that was planted, but not all of it. And so the big question, I think, becomes what is going to happen the rest of this spring. If the conditions continue to be the way that they are, you know, where we are having a good amount of moisture and the temperatures are warming up, I think we'll be in pretty good shape. I don't think that it will be a lot of concern for either nitrogen or sulfur being available again, because we are mineralizing. And then if we don't have excessive rain, there will be very little potential for whatever is mineralized or we apply through fertilizers that will be subject to loss. And so in that regard, I think we'll be in pretty good shape. One thing though that I've been a little worried about and wondering what it will look like this year is mostly related to nitrogen. Both April and so far May has been really windy. I've seen a lot of strong winds, and because of the early conditions where we could be out in the field, I suspect that there's been a lot of urea broadcasts in the fields, and with the strong winds, I'm a little concerned about the distribution of that urea. And so I'm predicting that we may see some kind of weird patterns happening this spring in the fields where, you know, urea might not be spread uniformly, and you may see areas where, you know, have kind of streaks of lighter color corn in some areas. And then the other part too is for those that did not incorporate urea, the conditions this spring because of the wind have been kind of ideal for volatilization loss. The soils have adequate moisture right now, and when you have a moist soil that dissolves urea quickly and then you have drying conditions because of the wind, that creates ideal conditions for volatilization loss. So there could be some potential for nitrogen loss that way through volatilization. So again, just something that I've been wondering about because of the windy conditions we've seen this year. A lot windier than I think I have ever seen in Minnesota in the 10 plus years I've been here.
Are there any last words from the group?
Well, on the sulfur side, I mean, I'm going to have hopefully a couple news releases coming out here at some point here. We just finished the alfalfa trial that I had going on that was 3 to 4 years at two locations. Kind of what I'm finding with sulfur is the site at Morris, more of a break even, but was still a positive benefit for sulfur application out there. The one at Rosemont where we had lower organic matter is where we tended to see a bigger response. One of the things though with sulfur, and it's one of the reasons I don't recommend really high rates for most growers, is you have to remember that there is still some incidental application of sulfur being applied on some of your fields. Particularly the MAP and DAP you apply still has a small percentage of it that's not accounted for in the fertilizer analysis. So it's one of the things I've been doing with many of my studies now, is I've been eliminating that as much as possible to try to sort out differences among sources or treatments. Because many cases, 5 to 10 pounds is adequate to essentially get us going. And kind of what Jeff was talking about is then we see a lot more of the uptake occurring later in the season that we don't need a whole lot, at least to start things off. You know, looking at that from the standpoint of rates, you know, a lot of growers will talk about, you know, maybe upping the rate with sulfur application. I think certainly some of the sources you might need to do that, but typically I think corn and, you know, Jeff, you could correct me, but it should be somewhere between 20 to 30 pounds total sulfur taken up. Around 25, I think, was average. About half of that's in the grain, half of that's in the stalk. So looking at most of our soils can supply probably at least 2/3 to 3/4 of that, if even in a deficient state, that, you know, you look at what we actually need, 10 to 20 pounds is typically enough. I will get some information more about that, though, because, again, a few things have finished up. There's a few things I'm looking at now on that with source-wise I wanted to update, but it's just a little bit too much to talk about today.
And then just a quick thing, you did mention alfalfa, but I've been thinking, you know, the whole discussion here has been on corn. Do we need to think differently or anything specific for, you know, other crops like soybean or, you know, even potatoes or other crops that we have not really talked about?
Well, I think potato, it's more critical. We did have a podcast a couple months ago on soybeans. So if anybody wants to hear a bit more about that, just you can go back and read that. We talked more about sulfur at that point.
Yeah, for potato, we are testing, you know, a new variety. This variety is very efficient in utilizing nitrogen. So we can reduce nitrogen by about 50% compared with the commonly planted Russell Burbank variety, and we can still achieve similar or even higher yield. So this is very interesting. So now we are trying to see how this new variety will respond to different irrigation. So that's why we are conducting the nitrogen by irrigation by variety trial right now with potato. And for new research this year, we are also doing testing biostimulant under on-farm conditions. So that's called Regen. That is a biostimulant that can facilitate the decomposition of crop residues. So we have a normal nitrogen rate without the Regen, and also we have normal nitrogen rate with Regen, and also 90% of the normal rate of nitrogen and with the Regen, and also 80% of normal nitrogen rate with Regen. So we want to see whether we can reduce nitrogen rate and still achieve similar or even higher yield with this new product. So this is the first time for us to do this under on-farm conditions. We have several fields with this. So I will be happy to share the results at the end of the year.
Before we go, if you have a question or comment for one of our guests or a topic you'd like discussed in a future episode, please email us at nutmgmt@umn.edu. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. All right, that about does it for this episode of the Nutrient Management Podcast. We'd like to thank the Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council, or AFRIC, for supporting the podcast. Thanks for listening.